Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of Everything Valuable and Beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I have a friend of mine, Tonya Shimon, is on in the air with me today. I want to talk a little bit about her dad and the book she wrote about her dad, Simeon Shimon, and he was a great artist. I've got the honor of being on sort of the ground floor when Tonya was thinking a couple years ago about writing about her dad. She showed me some of the work of her dad in her house, and I was impressed. And she said, well, I think I'm going to write a book about his life. So interesting. The book has gone on to win all sorts of awards. We have the Independent Press Distinguished Favorites Award, New York City Big Book Award in Arts and Entertainment, Winner Book of Excellence Award for Art, Pinnacle Book Achievement Award, Eric Hoffer Honorary Mention Award, Next Generation Indie Book Award finalist, Bronze Medal for Fine Art, First Prize Art Book, North Street Book Prize, and Main Crest Book Award 2022. So all sorts of awards and lots of interesting reviews too. This is always the issue is when a family member, and I was talking to Tonya about this, when a family member, maybe you're a listener and you're thinking, gosh, I've got the same thing going on. Family member discovers just how great a parent was in the art world, let's say. And there's a number of canvases there, but there's not a lot of track record of sales. How do you then reestablish the importance of someone's work? And many family members come to me, they ask, how do we do that? And there's two routes, really. There's the route that Tonya took, which is to write a book and then speak about the book and, you know, make the book public. And the other one is to have a museum show of some kind. And I've had clients do both, but I'm here with Tonya. We're going to talk a little bit about the art of Simeon Shimon, the book itself. And then I have to just brag on Tonya because she did what I always wanted to do. She excelled as a dancer. And I met her, God, 2013 or something, ages ago. We were going to do a show on the dance company at UCSB, and Tonya was one of the professors there, and I had her on the program ages ago, but she is she's a dancer of renown. She's danced with Martha Graham, Jose Limon, Per Lang, Ypsilanti Greek, and she was a soloist with Anna Sokolow's Players Project, Repertory West Dance Company. She's taught all over the country and she's taught abroad. And recently she was teaching in New York City. I remember she emailed me from there and she did a teaching job. She's a dance filmmaker. She made the documentary Mary Antony, A Life in Modern Dance, Lifetime National Endowment for the Arts, 2005 Lifetime Achievement Award from the Santa Barbara Dance Alliance. She's a professor emerita of the theater, dance and theater department at our university in Santa Barbara. And, there's a picture in the book. I have the book. I bought it. I love it. There's a picture in the book, The Art of Simeon Shimon, of Tonya and her dad. And she's just come off stage. And she and her dad are pictured talking. It's just a beautiful photo in the book. Anyway, I'm here with Tonya, and I would like to know a little bit about her dad's background. I know it because I've read the book a number of times, but Tonya, tell me, your dad,
sure.
You were reflecting on your dad as we were waiting to go on the air, mm-hmm. and the human rights element, the humanism of your dad, and how he manifested that in his art. I'd love for you to talk a little more about
sure,
that.
Sure. Well, my father was born in Astrakhan, Russia in 1902. And at that time, his parents had an antique shop. His father was an antique dealer and was actually involved in some human rights there because he would give things away to people who needed to get their sons out of the army as a bribe. And so he must have observed some of that from a very little age. His mother was a milliner. He wanted desperately to be a musician. His uncle was a musician and he adored music. They emigrated to the United States in 1912 when my father was 10. And he still had this wish to be a musician. But when he spoke to his parents and said that's what he wanted to do, he and his uncle said, absolutely not. And a week later, he started to draw. And what was rather striking is that he drew as an adult, not as a child draws. So he found his love. He continued drawing. He apprenticed himself to a commercial artist at 15 and went to art school at night, saying that he was older than he was at Cooper Union. He's primarily self-taught. He went to Europe when he was about 23 and to Italy and France and Spain and studied the great painters. And in 1936, he got a commission to do a mural, Contemporary Justice and the Child, that's in Washington, D.C., still on the third floor of the building, the Department of Justice. So from childhood, he had this memory of people being pulled through the streets. He had the faces of the poor in his mind in front of him. In New York City, his parents had a delicatessen. They were too poor and couldn't find other work. And he worked in the delicatessen. So he was actually a child laborer of sorts himself. So he tread a hard road in many ways. Somehow he found the arts on his own. He had no idea there were free places where he could go to study music or art, but he found it all, libraries and museums, on his own somehow. And this love was born and sustained him throughout his life. He worked as a commercial artist for Hollywood Films, doing the original Gone with the Wind poster and Solomon and Sheba, which is a 40-foot painting on canvas for Solomon and Sheba, among others. But when Hollywood was going down and slowing down because television was coming up and emerging, there was suddenly no work. And he found himself doing children's books, which he grew to just love. And for 30 years, he made 57 books, two that he authored. But his passion was fine art. And after 15 years of not painting in 1956, he went to Italy and started painting again. So many of the paintings represented in this book are from that period, some early work, but there are like 80 pictures of his, or 75 pictures of his art, fine art paintings. This is the only collection of this art available to anyone. And I wanted to save the art for his sake and because I felt it was meaningful art.
Well, you know, Richard's getting a sign. We got to go to quick break. But you know what interests me is there's parts in the book where you and I think some of the people that helped you put the book together, you're talking about your childhood and the relationship that you had with your dad and the way you grew up. And it's so interesting because I think about, Tonya, I think about your career, you know, as a wonderful contemporary artist in dance. And some of these revolutionary dancers that you danced with. And then I'm thinking, if Tonya didn't have the kind of upbringing that she had, very bohemian, I wonder if Tonya would have ended up being a CPA or something like this and not a great creative performer. So I'd like for you to reflect on, you know, the legacy that you're,
right.
You know,
Yeah, I was encouraged from the word go to dance. At 3 and a half, I fell in love with dance when I saw Chinese dancers at a party in our house. And after that, that was it. And I was imitating them. And he was my prince. And we had music going all the time. And he'd play classical music. And when I fell asleep, I'd say, louder, louder, please. I love the music. And
you see,
of course,
in my house, it would be go to sleep. You can't listen to music. And, you know, yeah. I used to like sneak poetry books under the covers and sneak flashlights under the covers.
Wow.
That wasn't done. Right. And you had a different experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then my father was painting all the time. For something, you know, it's either a big movie poster and I was allowed to put a dot of color on the page, special, you know, a flower, teeny little tiny something, you know, to encourage this. But they saw my love and they just encouraged it. I must say that I was pretty persevering. I had some difficulties physically and so forth, and I had to persevere, and that kind of came from myself. But I did see my father working intensely always, so I did see that as an example. And, you know, I was taken to museums early on, but my father found it for himself. So I don't really know what the answer would be to your great question, but it certainly helped that I had all of this support from both parents.
So we're going to go to quick break. When we get back from the break, I wanted you to describe your house in New York when we get back from the break.
Sure.
I think that's it. That's sort of the basis of my question and the difference that you had as a child to many people, for example, like myself, growing up in the suburbs mm-hmm. of Chicago in a really boring environment, you know. So don't turn that down. I'm speaking with Tonya Shimon, and her book is dedicated to, well, not it, it is about her dad's art, and it's available at Chaucer's and Tekelode and online, etc. The Art of Simeon Shimon. And I thought we'd just have a little bit of conversation after the book's been around for a year or two, talking about the various awards that the book has been receiving, et cetera. And the idea that it's kind of a really neat little present in these holiday weeks that we're experiencing here, because it's so beautiful. It's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful book. It's beautiful colors and beautiful paintings, and it's an inspirational story as well. We get back from the break. I want to talk a little bit to Tonya about her, where she grew up in New York and in the city, and the lifestyle that her parents introduced to her. So different, Tonya, I think, from many people's, you know, many generations' lifestyle. Okay, Richard, we're going to go to quick break. Don't turn that dial. Back with Tonya in a sec. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm celebrating the Art of Simeon Shimon. And Tonya reminded me to mention, and everybody get out your calendars, because Saturday, the 2nd of December at Tekelode, the bookstore Tekelode in Montecito, there's going to be a book signing. Tonya will be there. And then the book is kind of, it's three parts, actually. There's an essay by Charles Donlin. There's an essay by Joseph Woodard, and then there's the collection of art. There's 60, 70 plus images of the various wonderful paintings of Simeon Shimon. And there will be a book signing. So if you're thinking, gosh, you've got somebody who loves art in your family and loves kind of an interesting, challenging life story around art, this is the book. The book signing is from 2 to 4. At Tekelode, Saturday, December 2nd. And you get to meet Tonya, and you'll hear a little bit more about the book there. I want to go back. My question to Tonya was, I get an image by reading the book of Tonya's life growing up in New York City on 11th, I think it was. And Tonya, go and tell me more.
Well, when I was very young, as I said, I became in love with dance, and I was taken to many performances. The life in the house was rather intense for a while. My father was working very hard. My mother was ill. And so it wasn't necessarily the easiest going atmosphere until I was a little bit older. And then there were other things that happened later, including a divorce. So my upbringing was very much geared to helping me do what I needed to do. And we had wonderful friends. We had parties. We always had lovely laughter in the house when friends came over. This was always very social and lovely. I was rather a sad child for quite a while. I think because of the circumstances, but I also found something that I love. And so I had good friends. I went to a school that was very wonderful, where there was no discrimination, where we were all together, the Little Red Schoolhouse in Elizabeth Irwin High School, junior high. And then I went to the High School of Performing Arts. But during my time, I was taken to see a great deal. I heard music. People came in and out who were interesting. And so the atmosphere was certainly artistic around me.
And what was the house like?
And very warm, humanly. I mean, my father was a very warm, wonderful person. By the way, I want to mention that there's also a short autobiography in the book, because it goes to his humanity. It's of his early years in Russia and the United States. That is also part of the book. And that it is tomorrow, December 2nd.
Yes.
Quite soon. So back to my childhood.
What was the house like?
Well, the house, for my memories of this large house, were amazing. There was this long studio that I danced in. There was a garden at the end. It was a brownstone on 11th Street between 6th and 7th Avenue in Manhattan. I went to pass by it the other day when I was in New York, and it looks rather sad at the moment. I don't know whether it's for sale but the other houses are looking beautiful, and this one is looking a little sad. And I would love to go into this room once again. You know, we rented the top two floors. We lived in the bottom part of the house. Then we moved to another house for a while, another apartment, and then another. We moved a lot. So there was a lot of shifting going on at different times, but the art and the dance were steady. And the love was there. And the love was there. The love and the warmth was there, you know. So this was consistent.
You know, that's a beautiful thing you just said. So the art and the dance and the love were there. And that's kind of all you need, really. And the warmth,
yes,
as you say.
Yeah. And it helps you through the other things that are hard. And I actually feel that about the art right now, because there's been a wonderful reception in terms of people really feeling sustained. They feel this palpable feeling from the art. And I think, and they get the humanity and the dignity that's represented there for all people. And it seems to mean a lot to the people who have seen it and who really, really get it. So it's very, very wonderful for me to be able to share that feeling with others.
Before we have to say goodbye, Tonya, just very quickly, what's the story with Solomon and Sheba?
He painted this very large painting, and I didn't know it was still around. It was purchased by an art aficionado who has a gallery in New York and now in New Jersey. By chance, my son found a friend of his who found my father's name connected to it on the internet a year before the book was published. We went to see it. It was exhibited for the only time in years. It was rolled up for 30 years in a huge, huge case. And it's owned by the Detour Gallery in Red Bank, New Jersey. But we did get to see it. We photographed it. We stood in front of it. And it's an amazing mural for Hollywood.
I had just met you when someone had
discovered it. Yeah.
And
so there's many stories about my father's life. And one that I think is really important about the mural is that the only person of color represented is in his painting. There's one other as a servant, but they asked him not to do that, and he did it anyway. So there are people of color and women represented in this mural in educated and working roles. And so he was obviously making the statement, this is where we need to go.
And also, weren't we talking about the book that you were doing when, who was it? I think we were on the air with another speaker, and she knew of the mural that your dad did, the public works project, the Contemporary Justice and the Child,
right,
that he did in 1936 at the Department of Justice building. Somebody was on the air with us. I seem to recall this as a couple of years ago. We're talking about the book. She's like, I know that mural. I've seen that.
Yeah.
But you've been to visit it too, haven't you?
Yeah. And the guards knew it and loved it. It was their favorite painting. When I went with my son, they were building and they said, well, you can come if you wear hard hats and big shoes. We should. Sure. So we went to see it. And my son, I forget how old he was, probably 14. He looked at it and he said, was your father a perfectionist? And I said, yes. He worked on it for 4 years. It was not finished after two. And he went and slept in the Department of Justice building by day and painted at night for another 2 years, alternately with work in New York. So he was going back and forth. And one of the years he was doing that was the year he did Gone with the Wind, which is kind of remarkable in terms of the contrast of what he was dealing with.
So he was sleeping at the Department of Justice.
In the Department of Justice building when he was there and painting by night.
And just roughly how,
because he was a perfectionist. He wanted to do the best he could.
So we'll take a quick break. When we get back from the break, I just want you to describe that mural just a little bit. What the subject matter mm-hmm. is, how big it is, et cetera, et cetera. So, hey, Richard.
Yes, Elizabeth.
Hey, Richard. Let's go to quick break. We get back. Tony's going to, this is the coup de grace, really, the Temporary Justice and the Child at the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. He's going to describe for us why it's unique and why it's so beloved when we get back from the break. This is, again, a little bit of a shout out. This is The Art of Simeon Shimon. There's going to be a book signing Saturday, December 2nd from 2 to 4. At Tekeloti Bookstore. You can hear Tonya, Charles Donlin, and Joseph Woodard, the two contributing authors to the book as well. And you can get a signed copy of the book to give to somebody who loves art. I think I own the book. It's a delightful read, and it's a beautiful book. It's quite large. It's beautiful, unique colors too. I just really can't tell you enough. It's beautiful. Okay, don't turn that down. Back in a minute with Tonya.
All right, you're clear.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. We're just talking a little bit about The Art of Simeon Shimon. This is a book that the artist's daughter, my friend Tonya, authored. It's been met with wide acclaim. And there's going to be a book signing tomorrow, Saturday, at Tekeloti Bookstore, 2 to 4, December 2nd. And you get to have a signed copy if you go. And very quickly, we just have a few minutes left, Tonya. Will you tell us what that mural is, the Contemporary Justice and the Child? What's the theme?
Sure. Well, it is about justice for the child. And I'll just show you, this is the book, and this is the mural, which is quite large. And it depicts many facets of life. It has factory workers with very downtrodden faces on one side and the homeless. In the middle, you see a mother and a child with outreached hands as if to say, we're here, what's next? And both Charles Donnellan and Joe Woodard have written wonderful points of view about this mural in detail in the book. In their essays, you have at the bottom right corner people working in engineering tools and science, and you have sports writers, players up at the top representing the positive side of life and what can happen when people are educated and not pushed under. So it is for justice for the child, but also for all people of all colors.
Which we need.
Yes.
Desperately today. Well, yes. Good luck at the book signing. And it's lovely to see you.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. An honor to be here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And we're going to switch horses in the midstream here. I've got C. Gumiko, and she is actually a poet. And she's actually going to talk to us about the Poetry Teen Mentorship through the Arts Fund. And this has been going on for a little bit. And one of the women at the Arts Fund mentioned that she was super interesting and doing wonderful poetry classes. And I thought, I've always loved poetry. I want to talk with C. Is she on the line, Richard? Hey, Richard. Okay, well, let me introduce her. Maybe Richard will patch her through. She has designed all sorts of wonderful things, art installations, incorporating poetry, video, and dance. She's curated a TEDx event called the Rediscovery of the Senses. She's a poetry teacher for the California Poets in the Schools. She won awards for writing in the film and television industry. And she is working as of 2021 in collaboration with elementary students. And you've probably seen these wonderful events that she's put together. I didn't know she was behind this, but the Botanic Garden, when they had their butterfly exhibit, they also had a poetry contest that C put together. And the Santa Barbara Museum of Art, similarly, there was a bunch of young poets that wrote poems about the art. Poetry with Wings, it was called, with the butterflies, and it engaged more than 1,000 students in the community and won a Santa Barbara Beautiful Award. And C, are you on mute? There you go. Are you with us?
Yes.
Very good. Okay. We've got you here. And she's established the Youth Poet Laureate Program in Santa Barbara in 2021. And then the Santa Barbara Youth Poet Laureate Program produced in San Marcos High School, Madeline Miller, inducted in 2022 at City Hall, for her poem about social justice, teen activism, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. See, why is poetry important to these young students?
Oh, gosh. I feel like the students here, not just here in Santa Barbara, but actually all over the world, are feeling a bit helpless, surrounded by the circumstances of the world, you know, that we're all in right now. And I feel that poetry gives them an opportunity to express their inner lives, give words to all of it, to their fears, to their hopes, and give them a sense of agency. It's really important for all kids. And so we teach anywhere from second grade all the way through seniors, and also work with adults.
And not only that, you have a student, Anna Matthew. She's recently won the title in Santa Barbara County, and she's advancing onto the Poetry Out Loud statewide competition. She must be really talented.
She really is. That was so exciting. So Anna was part of the teen mentorship that was offered through the Arts Fund. And it's really, I'm finding more and more that these community partners are so important and really vital to supporting all the teens. But Anna participated in that. And then in November, on the 14th, she went ahead and read her poem. She had never done anything like it before, but she just brought it. It was so exciting to see. And I'm really excited to see where she'll go even beyond the state.
You know, it's interesting. So we lost a dear poet, ex-poet laureate of Santa Barbara, Kincaid Rawl,
Sojourner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we lost her recently. And I covered her last book, and she read some of her poetry on the air. And I thought, gosh, I just want to give a shout out that, you know, this is kind of an interesting thing that we've got a tradition of poetry here in Santa Barbara. And I wanted to mention that Cal poet slash teachers work in the schools from grades 3 to 8. And this is, they'd like to work with kids at risk in middle school and high school in North County. And C is talking about the recent community partnerships and how important that is. Now, I met C or heard of C through the Arts Fund, through Terry there. And we talk about also the collaborations between the various other art forms, for example, the Santa Barbara Museum of Art and Poetry with the kids. And we talk a little bit about the Santa Barbara Botanic Garden and another collaboration with Explore Ecology. What is that, C? What's Explore Ecology?
Explore Ecology is a nonprofit here in Santa Barbara that helps bring education about the environment. And it seemed like a natural fit for the kids to create, I should backtrack a little bit. They also have a wonderful reuse sales area. So you can take things and create assemblages. So what we did is we had the kids create collages from old magazines. So it's a reuse of something old into something beautiful and new. And they did an amazing job. That was paired with their poems. And
okay,
then
they made these collages. And were the collages shown anywhere?
They were in the upstairs gallery of Explore Ecology. And so it was just a really, we're finding that having the kids go from their inner life to the page, to either reciting or creating art or who knows, dance. I'd like to have them just break into all areas.
Well, you know, the previous guest, Tonia Shimon, she's professor emeritus of dance at UCSB, and I'll connect you two
because that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I think Tonya would love to meet you. Richard's giving us a sign we've got to go to quick break, but I want to just reintroduce. I'm talking with C, and C, pronounce your name for me, last name for me. I think I'm butchering it.
Yeah, that's okay. Every single teacher did. It's Gumusio. Gumusio is my last name. The first name is C, and that's a nickname for Cynthia.
Okay, so C Gumusio. And she's a poet, and she is teaching poetry teen mentorship. She teaches classes in poetry through the Arts Fund. Their programming is fantastic, by the way. The Arts Fund, you know, the fact that they even have a poetry teacher. And then, of course, C's been teaching the Youth Poet Laureate program designed to honor young writers and leaders between the ages of 13 and 19. Who are making a civic impact through community engagement, and they're utilizing the power of poetry and the written word to do so. And when we get back from the break, I want C to talk about the difference. Well, I don't know if this is a question that C can answer. I was thinking about my young years, and I took over the summer in our little suburban community. I sought out a poetry teacher because I was writing poetry, you know, when I was a kid, and I wanted a teacher, and there was a little group that was getting together. I think I was 12 or 13, and my group was all female, and I'm wondering if you've got male poets in your classes. See, we'll get back from the break, but talk a little bit about that. Richard, let's go. Richard? Hey, Richard. Okay, let's go to quick break. We're talking with C. Gumusio, and we're talking about the Poetry Teen Mentorship Project through the Arts Fund. Fantastic, fantastic program. Don't turn the dial back in a minute.
Flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze
Welcome back, and I'm talking today with C. Yumiko, and she,
it's okay. Gumusio.
Gumusio.
Yes, thank you.
She works for California Poets in the Schools. And now I've got a better sort of handle on the program, because over the break, C was telling me that it's actually, she's gotten together with some community leaders and she's developed a three-prong approach. And we're going to talk about that just a little bit. And I want to kind of describe it to you, because I was one of those kids that needed, I was a sensitive kid. I needed a sense of community. I was a poet and I loved to write poetry, and I felt so alone because I didn't think anyone else in our suburban community, especially not in my middle school, even tried to write poetry. So C's designed this with a number of organizations in town. Number one, we have the Arts Fund Teen Mentorship Program. They have their mentorship program called Poetry Out Loud. That feeds in chronologically to the County Board of Education Poetry Slam. That's going to happen February 15th. So that's the next step. And the third step is in March. She's taking applications for the next Youth Poet Laureate. And this kind of goes around the year calendar so that these kids, these teens, have a community in poetry. Now, the problem is that poetry is so valuable and so important, but it's kind of hard to get the word out to the teens themselves. And so if you are a parent and you are listening today and you've got a child or a grandchild that is a hidden poet, and you think to yourself, boy, I'd love to land this child where that child belongs, I want you to write this down. I want you to get in touch with the California Poets in the Schools website. There is also a page on Facebook, California Poets in the Schools. And this is how you're going to connect your child, your teen, with their community. If they're young budding poets, this is how you're going to do it. And we want to get that word out that we are right now developing this whole year-long program with the various community leaders through what C's been working on. Now, see, I want to get back to this question. When I was a young kid, this is generations ago, of course, but my poetry classes were female.
Mm.
Males could have joined, but there weren't a lot of male poets. And yet, the greatest, I don't know, celebrities of our age, Bob Dylan, for example, you know, who takes the name Dylan from a great poet, who is a great poet himself, you know, so do you have many males in your organizations?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting that you ask or bring this subject up, because when I first started, I thought it was going to be all the little girls in the classrooms that would thrive. And they do. But I found this to be so exciting that there would be young boys in the class that would be so, they have an element of risk in their writing, which is really, they're bold, they're adventurous, they're willing to mix up words and take chances. So I've seen some boys really thrive. And I can think of a few male candidates for the Youth Poet Laureate program. So it's not just for girls, I should say that. There's many, many strong females. In this last Poetry Out Loud competition, I think it was mostly women, maybe about 65% girls. But there were boys that were involved for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And you say that this is so interesting, because you're saying that this element of risk that the male poets bring, because I mean, it's also risky itself, you know, in sort of this, what do they call it, toxic masculinity culture. You know, it's risky also to be a male saying, I'm a sensitive male, sensitive man, and I'm using my words to be sensitive. I mean, but that's the strange thing, is that the people we celebrate the most in our culture are, you know, like I said, male poets and singers and songwriters, mm-hmm. and we've got such great respect for them. It's just a question I had because it's my own, you know, background. Any male could come into our poetry class that was given, you know, free poetry class by the county, the same thing, you know, but not a lot of men. I want to know how this, how poetry with wings, you know, you write that it engaged more than 1,000 students in the community. How did that go over? What tell me about that experience.
Yeah, this was so wonderful. This happened actually because of COVID. We typically had kids go to the museum in a theater setting, in an auditorium setting, and read their poems. But because of COVID, we couldn't. So I worked together with Patsy Hicks, who I adore, over at the Museum of Art. She's in their education department. I said, Patsy, can we collaborate where the kids do art and then we have it in the window? So it'll be poetry and art in the window. Those beautiful pieces of art were up in the window. People were walking by them in State Street. And it just so happened that the director of literacy, Carlos Pagan, from the Santa Barbara County Board of Education was walking by. And he said, I want to bring this up into North County. And suddenly we were bringing our program, Poetry with Wings, which was kind of like a haiku and this beautiful art that the museum came up with, up into North County. And that's how it expanded and really received some nice awareness.
Now, the North County program, what high schools or middle schools are we talking about up there?
Right. So specifically, there's a school called Fitzgerald, and there's a wonderful poet teacher that I work alongside, and her name is Isabel Walker, and she wanted to bring poetry to the underserved kids up in that area. And actually, the kids at Fitzgerald are at risk of falling into juvenile hall incarceration and into that. That's why they're at Fitzgerald. And she found that working through other programs similar to this, like the boys camp, that the kids were finding some way to express, you know, why they were involved. And, you know, it's so interesting. This week on The Independent, that's the issue. Right.
And so the Independent, Big Changes for Juvenile Justice, is the cover story in the Independent, by the way, listener. And I, you know, so see, what's the connection, you know, between, say, modern poetry culture, like hip hop, you know, what do they call that? This just the slam, where, you know, people are very extemporaneously making art, making, you know, verbal art. Is that the kind of poetry, or how does that fit in the program?
Oh, let's see. Well, I would say it depends on the grade level, and it also depends on where we're actually teaching. So would that be the population of kids to the middle school and the high school? Of course, the poem selections that the kids use as examples would reflect their heritage, you know, the population of the kids that we're speaking to.
Right? I see.
So it's a relatable. It's the poems are relatable in terms of the subject matter and the voice that they hear. They can see themselves in the poems that are the examples. So important, right? So then they can write their own. Right. That's the diving point. Yeah.
So do you have a memory of a particular student and a particular poem? Just Richard's giving us a sign. We have 2 minutes till we have to say goodbye. Do you have a memory of a particular poem, particular student that kind of brought you close to tears?
Oh. So often. I can't yet. Well, I can tell you there was one. I was working with, these were 10-year-old kids, and I said, I was asking them to write about a place that felt like home to them. a place that they could go to that felt like home. And one little boy kind of, you know, they were raising their hands and sharing. And the one said, it's my backyard. It's my bedroom. It's beautiful. And one little boy said, I couldn't understand what he said. And I said, can you repeat that? And he said, blah, blah, blah. I could only get a part of it. I said, can you say that one more time? He said, it's where my dad is alive. It's where my dad is alive. And it was, this was after the debris flow. And so we talked about
how moving. So when his dad was alive, see, thank you for what you do for the community. We'll have to have you back on. I want to hear more about this. Thank you for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.